Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. Apologies if we do sound a little bit different at the moment. We are recording this one from a hotel room in Echuca as we're up here for the under 12 Jamboree. I also did have a thought halfway through that intro. It's like, I don't know that I checked that for what they were actually saying. And I like to think they were saying, welcome to the Panathinaikos Stadium, where we hope you all have a festive time. But that is an excerpt from the Panathinaikos crowd. I am Rob Calder, joined by Zoe Carr, Nick Mihai. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
The sound drop is apt because we were fortunate enough. This is a little bit of a bonus episode as well. This is one we weren't going to do just due to school holidays, but timely as it was, that we thought we'd jump in on this one. And we were fortunate enough during the week to attend a coaching clinic put on by the Panathinaikos coaching staff. We were lucky to have Christos Sarellis, who is at Lavrio formerly as an assistant coach, as a head coach. So 19 years he spent in that program as both a head coach and assistant coach. He's a former head coach of Panathinaikos Basketball Club and now an assistant coach. And Savas Kamperidis, who was a former player, went into the NBA draft, wasn't drafted but played a lot in Europe, was at Aris as a head coach and also went through Lavrio as an assistant coach there as well and is now on the Panathinaikos coaching staff. So really fortunate to have them come in and do a coaching clinic for us down at Courtside in Port Melbourne, and big shout out as well, of course, to Justin Shuler and Courtside in Port Melbourne for
they
hosting.
Should have called it Portside.
Portside's not bad.
Yeah.
Man, we've missed our opportunity there. But, I mean, phenomenal venue for a start. Like, you walk into that joint and it's an incredible look from the retail side of things, but also a fantastic venue to host a coaching clinic straight off the bat. So we were really lucky to get an hour of time with the Panathinaikos coaches who jumped in with us. And, you know, they sort of said, well, look, effectively, what do you guys want? What do you want us to talk about? Anything you got? Like, this is a massive, massive club. Like, they're, I think you said, Zoe, like 120 something years old.
Yeah, 1908.
It's wild how long they've been around for, and obviously, just the resources they have, the history they have, and all those sorts of things. And it was great to get a little bit of a taste of European basketball out here as well. So phenomenal clinic off the bat. I think we got 5 days' notice that it was going ahead. We got it out to coaches as quickly as we could at that representative level because that's where the clinic was going to be pitched at. And had over 100 registrations for the clinic, and
it was 110 in the end.
Yeah, I think it was. So a whole bunch of coaches crammed in there to watch some of our MPP and SPP athletes jump on court with them as well. But I mean, we'll start with probably initial thoughts of the clinic as a whole, and then we'll probably unpack a little bit of it, and then get into the game against Partizan Belgrade the other night as well. But I mean, Zoe, what were your first thoughts of the clinic?
I think.
Hang on, before you go, Zoe really struggles with accents. Like, this is not a Zoe strong suit on this, so it was always going to be interesting as to what her takeaways are. So, but you managed. Like, that's the big thing.
Yeah. I did. I managed because there was an elite level of attention to detail.
Yep.
And so, even if whilst we laugh, it's not a joke. I'm not great at deciphering accents. I can't hear them like I think normal people can. So I have trouble, and then I get embarrassed because
you don't want to ask like a second and third time.
And I don't want to offend anybody. Yep. So yeah. I just say, and then look like an idiot. But I'd rather look like an idiot than offend somebody. So. But the level of detail that they had in what may have seemed, if you saw maybe some clips or photos or whatever, you might have seen something that looked incredibly simple, but it was the detail was just elite, and the reasons why. They were saying this is why we, you know, load on this foot at this time and to cause this and all those sort of things. And you actually saw the athletes develop within the session as well. And one of the things that validated, I think, for me was that, you know, I am a games approach coach. I love games approach coaching. But I've also particularly of late been a fair advocate for making sure that we don't just shut away what has made fundamentals what they are and, you know, sometimes that does mean a little bit of on-air stuff, just as long as it's not the entire session. And they did a whole bunch of, you know, what probably looked like just layup lines. But the
yeah, it was me kicking the table.
It wasn't me this time. Yeah,
I'm a little bit thrown out. I'm used to my normal meeting room four at SBC.
But the detail for me was what separated it from just a regular layup line or a regular, you know, on air drill. I think if you've got that attention to detail in that, then you know, you saw the athletes get something out of it.
Yeah, Nick, what would you sort of take away from it?
Yeah, very similar. The level of detail in the most simple things that are in basketball is what not only impressed me, it almost blew me away. Like how detailed he went into just how to dribble a ball into a pick and roll, not even using the pick and roll, but to dribble into it. And he got to a point where some of the kids couldn't perform it. So he had them at half court and he's like, he's performing it for them. And I remember I turned behind. It might have been you, Zoe, where I was like, the coach is the best one to do the demo of this. Like that's, but like all jokes aside, there's a space that we need to be working on, right? Like, so when we just, yes, I'm also games approach method and things like that as well, but also like, are we missing that skill set of developing these athletes to be able to perform the task? The other thing, you go. The other thing that was impressive to me was the relationship and rapport between the two coaches. I felt like they knew each other for 30 years. And I had a quick check on like Wikipedia and stuff. I think they knew each other for like a year and a half.
Yeah, they haven't been working with each other for long.
I felt like they knew each other forever because the way they worked together, like when one was leading the Spain early exit and the other one was in the line trying to get other players ready and like giving them feedback without throwing them under the bus in front of everyone, was really impressive to me as well. Like they do a great job of building that relationship and you could see the kids connecting with them like throughout the session, like within about half an hour, the kids were like, yeah, you're my coach.
Yeah.
Like it was so fast. I was like, wow, that's way quicker. I didn't even know you could do it that quick.
Well, I just wonder with that, and you've both touched on it, like games approach coaching and all those sorts of things. I just wonder if we lose an ability to get a better rapport with players because we are leaving them to their own devices a little bit too, where we are saying, well, look, you figure it out. And does that maybe make them better decision makers potentially, but does that lose a little bit of rapport and back and forth between a coach and a player? Probably. Well, I think there's a line in there somewhere and it is interesting because part of it too was Coach Savas, who I think was the third assistant coach, his English was much better than Christos, who was the first assistant coach. So there were times where the players couldn't understand what one of the coaches was saying and the other one would just jump in and fix it for them straight away and just put it in a way that they could understand it. And it was a lot of fun watching them work together and the layering and how they built it up as well. And should say, we did film the clinic. We will put that up on Talking Split socials and those sorts of things as well. So you will be able to get a copy of it. The audio is a little bit funky at times because we only have one mic to go to mic up. So there will be times where you may not be able to hear all the teaching and all the details and all those sorts of things. But it kind of struck me as a little bit of an old school throwback with how it was teaching. Like this is probably what I remember coaching looking like when I first entered the coaching pathway. I think we've probably gone too far away from what that was. And that's, you know, we joke about it a lot. I think we have that, you know, oh, it depends, is a lot of our answers for various things because it is. There's a lot of variables that come into this, obviously. But I think we've probably gone from a very militant way of teaching where it has to be this and this is what it must look like. We've gone as far away as we can from that as possible, where it's almost like, hey, it's on you to make all the decisions and as coaches we'll try and just facilitate a session and, you know, you figure it out effectively to the players.
Do you feel with that they've just, like the traditional ways, they've just modernized the traditional ways instead of going? Because I felt like there was a bit of both. I felt like, yes, there was the old school way, but it wasn't disciplinary. It wasn't, you must do this at all.
No, and you saw that when you got to the teaching for the concepts.
Yeah.
Because the clinic was kind of split into two parts. So there was some work on how to use the on-ball screen was the initial part of it. And then it was, well, okay, can you show us some middle pick and roll options and some concepts out of that? And I thought the teaching in the skill set and how to use the on-ball screen was detailed, it was specific, it was direct, it gave them a really good platform for when they got into the concepts then they were actually happy for them to be a little bit free and loose with it and those sorts of things. And that kind of got me thinking, it's like, well, are we spending all our time hoping that the skill will get taught within the concept, or should we be teaching the skill before we get into the concept? And it's a little bit of chicken and the egg, and I don't really know. Like, I mean, what do you sort of think on
it,
Zoe?
Well, I think it goes even further back, because it wasn't just the actual skill that was taught at the time. It was also the body movement.
Yep.
Your foot here, load this foot there, because create of this, this, and that will, you know, move them into out of frame, and then you can attack and all this sort of stuff. So it was movement first, skill set second, then concept third.
And Darren McInnes's ears have just perked up somewhere in in Victoria.
You'll be getting a text real soon. Yeah.
But it was, and you saw how it did build in. But I think one of the things I absolutely loved, and yes, I'm not good at accents. I'm even worse at pronouncing names, so I'm not going to do it. But there was one coach who did mainly the actual skill set stuff, and then one coach that really took over the concept and the more team stuff. And the one that took over the concept and team stuff, I believe, is first assistant as well.
Yeah, so he was the former head coach of Panathinaikos, so that was Christos, and is now an assistant.
And he walks in and he says, that what you just saw, that is the most important stuff. I can't do that stuff, not with junior athletes, but that is the most important stuff that, you know, and through the biggest coach assist to the to the other coach there of what he did matters more than what I'm about to do, kind of thing. Yeah. Because without that, he can't then take them as a senior player and put them in these positions and run these concepts. So that was really cool. That was a moment, because one, I understood it, so I was pretty pumped. But then second, what it showed coaches of, you know, I think often we get caught, you know, trying to always be the one that's the one that's got the answer, or the one that's that's right, or that, you know, and rather than, hey, no, that was really good, what you did was really good, and throwing that coach assist because it might, I don't know, might make us not look as good or something like that. Like, it's a generalization, but I do seem to see it a lot. But so
validate what's important, though.
Yeah.
Like, which is skill sets.
Yeah.
Like, correct. Yes, decision-making matters. Like, we're not dismissing that at all. But if you can't execute a skill, it doesn't matter if you can play within an offense, because ultimately the ball will get to you eventually and you'll bounce it off your foot, or you can't throw it in the ocean, whatever the case.
We've spoken about it on the pod before. When skill set dictates decision making, that is a problem. Like, skill set should not – it should complement the decision. The decision should be what is made, and then the skill set makes that happen, not – this is the decision that needs to be made, but I can't execute that, so I'm going to make another decision.
It does come to how our programs work and how they're so different to Panathinaikos, right? Like, they from what I know, start from juniors all the way up, and their program stays. So they're developing these players. But you can actually see what they're teaching. And this is why I encourage everyone to watch this clinic, because it's not something that they just brought in and said, oh, I'm going to show you how good I am. They were legitimately going, this is what we teach. And then go and watch the Greece versus Slovenia Eurobasket final. And you'll see all of those skills being performed. Yep. It is incredible, because I actually rewatched it recently after the clinic. And I'm like, he was talking about that. He was talking about that. He was talking about this pick and roll. He was doing that. Yeah. Like, it was all there.
But even in the game that we watched, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but there was, like, they were talking about how you wheel, when we talk about wheeling in receiver spots, and you know, you don't wheel on a shoulder to the
toes to sideline.
Yeah.
Effectively. Yeah.
Wheel with your toes to the baseline. So then if they happen to shoot it, you can rebound it from the other side. So there was a reason for everything that they were saying.
I didn't even think about that, by the way. No, just let you know, as a coach, I'll claim ignorance. Like, I did not even think to say that to a kid.
Yeah. Just get there.
Yeah. just wheel.
Yeah.
Like, but then that's the detail.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the biggest thing. Like, that's the biggest thing I took away is I feel like we may have lost a little bit of the art of coaching. and the art of skill development, because, and I get it, we want to do things with kids that are fun. We want to do things with kids that make them enjoy the sport and all those sorts of things. You know which kids enjoy the sport? The really talented ones. Like, that's ultimately, skill set will matter. And I mean, I'm trying to put a little bit of a line through it, and it's a very, you know, in pencil line rather than an in pen line. But I'm probably leaning more towards, in, you know, say under 14s and under, I probably am still a bit of a games approach person with decision making and let them kind of figure out and have fun. But I reckon by 16s and 18s, now you're really trying to dial in and like really teach the skill to be specific. And hey, this has to be here on this angle, because that's going to give you the most amount of opportunity to be able to do what you need to do in that sort of space. Because you think about the layering that they went through on that on-ball screen, and it was like, hey, we're just going to start with just getting low. And his reasoning is, well, you have to get lower as you're coming off the on-ball screen so that when you come up again, you are coming up with power. It's like, okay, we don't really teach that necessarily. We just teach sort of layups and kind of figure it out, but we weren't teaching about power. Then it was, okay, little double cross into this, into the, and it just kept going and going and going and going. And it's like, well, here's what we teach next. Here's what we teach next. And what it really showed was there was a real clear, I'm doing this to get this right so that I can get the next thing right. And I'm getting that right so that I can get the next thing right. And there was just such great progression as it went through it. And for something just as simple as using an on-ball screen.
Well, I think one of the reasons that I know I was attracted to games approach coaching was because the kids want to play. Like that. So it means that if you're in a games approach session, it's not boring. Like at the end of, you know, your 2 hours or whatever, often I hear kids saying, oh, that went really quick, like because they're enjoying it, right? So it'd be interesting because it didn't look like those kids were bored during the session. But they are also like our upper MVP, level SPP kids.
And could it be a little bit as well? They knew who was coaching them too. Maybe. And they had an idea of like, these guys are the real deal.
Think about after the session, like how many of the kids are like, damn, that was a good workout.
Yeah. So it'd be like
– they loved it.
And how many coaches were like speechless? Like even when Rob, I think you came out and said, anyone got any questions? And everyone was like the look of like,
yeah, what did we just say?
I'm just – hang on.
I'm still processing.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see what a session like that would be with either younger athletes or athletes definitely. At a lower level.
Yep,
for sure. And see if it is the same, because it may be age and level specific.
It could be. And you do think about it, because there was a couple of times, as you mentioned, Nick, that the kids struggled to pick something up. Like, and that might have been accent, that might have been skill set. Like, we did have a few genuine bigs there that are obviously doing some ball handling stuff on the perimeter, which is not their forte. Like, that's not their skill set that they play in. And they did a pretty good job on it, to be completely fair. But they were able to go quickly because those kids were at the high level, as you said, Zoe. Mm. Like, so it could progress a little bit quicker. But it was really interesting just watching the kids that are probably, I would suggest, at the better end of the BV programs, just pick things up and apply it really well when it got to the gameplay section.
Mm.
And that was the really interesting part, because even then, the coaches didn't let them off the hook. Like, it got to gameplay and it's like, hey, remember, like, lower coming off. We spoke, this is the first drill that we did. Like, there was no, we'll just forget about the teaching of the skill set.
It carried
like,
over.
Yeah, like, yes, you've made a great decision coming off this on-ball and that's great, but remember the execution of the on-ball still wasn't where it needed to be. So they were still held accountable on that, which I really loved. Like, I enjoy that. And look, they're in a position where, of course, you know, those pro teams have a fairly lengthy staff, so they can. Like, if we're just, you know, one and two coaches, we may not be able to get that level of detail.
But does that then maybe, to be able to get that level of detail, do we need to simplify what we're doing?
Absolutely.
So if we're if we're on our own, for example, which a lot of coaches are regularly on their own, you know, is it instead of, you know, trying to max out 20 things throughout your session, can you break it down to maybe 3?
Well, I've got one for you, Zoe. If that's the case, are you looking at that clinic? Are you looking at your program now and going, I'm going to simplify some stuff? Or are you like, no, I'm on the right path? Like, what are you thinking at the moment? Because I guess that would probably base what a lot of junior coaches will.
Yeah, I'll give you this.
The car ride home was an interesting one for the two of us. Like, in no way a bad way, but I don't think
it's always a concern. I never know what's
going on. No, you're looking for a coffee shop, because that's what me and my brother were talking about.
There was a Macca's run because it was a bit of a late night.
It was late. Yeah. And I was hungry.
But we didn't shut up the entire way home. Like, and it was bouncing ideas off each other, like, hey, do you think this could happen now? Do you think, you know, was this, have we been doing the right thing by the kids by doing this? And of course, depends, because it's not one size fits all. But there was an element of, look, I think I've taught this really well, but it has highlighted a couple of areas that I think I can really dial into now to get better at over the course. So, you know, it's not all right or all wrong, much the same as games approach is not completely the only way to do things, as opposed to really dialing in on skill development and detail and those sorts of things.
But skill development's not necessarily all on zero, by the way. No, just not to be clear. We're not talking about standing on the sideline and dribbling. That's not all.
But I think that's why Games Approach came in with such a roaring you know, like,
to get away from the on air.
So that stuff that they were doing, the skill development that they were doing in the beginning, yes, it was on air, and this might be because I came through in the militant age where, you know, you spun the ball to yourself.
I think all three of us did.
Yeah, you spun the ball to yourself, you squared up with inside foot, and then you spun it again, and, you know, like all that stuff. Yep. But
it's alarming. I think I do a bit of that now. Yeah. So, anyway.
But I found it – I didn't find it in any way – boring or
like kids.
it was engaging. It was so whilst it was on air and not in a game play type situation, it was still it was exciting for me. I was watching it and I was excited by it.
Do you know why I think that's the case? I think it's only, this is just, I've got no data to support this. I think this is going to be my quote now.
In a lot of places, mate, you don't need to say it. Just say, I read it somewhere.
You need a button for that.
I do need a butter. I've got a butter. That's going in, isn't it?
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say now. What were we talking about?
I've got something for you. So I think part of this too, though, is if you wanted to turn what we saw the other night, which was a little bit of on zero stuff, into competitive, you still can.
Easily.
Throw a defender at the ring. Like, really, like, work on the skill set, maybe without a defender to start off with, where you can go through your teaching points and then you still have to finish contested at the rim. Because one of the things that I think the kids actually really enjoyed, and again, I'm making stuff up for them, but I got the impression they really enjoyed, was being challenged to execute a direction and a teaching point on the go. Like, it wasn't just as simple as, can you put the ball between your legs twice? It's like, no, here's how I want you to do it. I want your chest on your knee. I want your feet to be in split stance. When your feet go to split stance, they have to both hit the floor at the same time. It's not one, then the other. They both land at the same time because that will drive you power to get over the top of this. Don't roll your hand on the crossover, push through, snap it. And it's like, wow. Like,
he took off his jump shot. Did you see that one? Where it was the bounce.
Like the pound
in,
into
the pound into it. He's like, no, take that away.
Yeah.
No.
Don't need that one.
Go back, do it again.
Yep.
Like, straight away.
And I enjoyed that. Yeah. Like, to be honest, like, it's, like, we all sort of sat in the corner going, holy, like, this is different. Like, but, and it was funny because, like, the clinic ended and Zoe was up the top. Where the camera was and was walking down the stairs, and, you know, there is some swearing involved in this, but, like, walked past one of the coaches, and it's like, holy F, that was some good S. and straight away, like, Zoe laughs. It's like, that's funny.
It shows.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and speaks on behalf of all of us.
Exactly. But we were all the same. Like, we sat in the corner going, wow, this is, like, some really impressive layering and teaching. And even the concept stuff, what they did was nothing that we probably haven't seen before in some capacity. Like, there was no... wow, that's how you play basketball now.
Or it's not brand new.
No,
like, it's not like this.
It's been seen before in that end. But how they combined it with the skill set stuff, how they combined it with decision making, how they talked about, well, look, one thing that really hit me was their desire for overhead passes.
Mm.
Like, that was one thing that I really noticed. Like, they're like, no, that skip is an overhead pass. It's like, oh, okay, this is different. Like, normally we just push pass off the shoulder or it gets there. They're like, no, the power in the overhead pass, it has to be an overhead pass. It has to get there flat. Well, okay, this is interesting. And then that translated, like, we watched Panathinaikos play Partizan the other night and the ball moved on a skip on an overhead pass.
Like a bullet.
It was. Like, this is clearly something they genuinely believe in that has been applied to their program throughout, which I thought was really interesting. But the concept stuff was kind of cool just to watch them because, they started, like, one on zero, obviously, with the skill set. Then it became 2-on-0, and they brought the big out. The coach would play a little bit of dummy defense every now and again. It's like, hey, if I'm standing this way, go that way. If I'm standing this way, go that way. But the teaching off the on-ball screen I really enjoyed, because one of their teaching points that I thought was great was, as you're coming off that on-ball, you as the guard should have the back of your hand or your wrist on the thigh of the screener. And the screener has to stay there until they feel that contact go away. That's their cue to roll or to pop and separate out of that. And it's like, that's interesting. And look, again, nothing we haven't seen before, but it's just a different way of doing it.
And the level of detail. Yeah. Like, that's a lot of detail as well. Just going back to the coach jumping in, I thought it was like, with the detail, when he was saying you need to go at this speed to beat the defender to this spot, and they just weren't doing it. And he goes, right, you got to beat me to this spot. And then he forced him. Like, he jumped on the floor and he was running out there with him. Like, just the way of like, no, this is how you have to – this is the speed you have to go every single time.
So games approach. Mm. Straight away. So there's your teaching game for understanding straight away, because now it's not on air. It's with a defender. Mm. And one of the things that we do have to highlight as well, it was a coaching clinic. Like, it wasn't a playing clinic. It was a coaching clinic for coaches to see what they teach and how they teach it. So, of course, it was on air. They want us to see what it looks like. Mm. Like, this wasn't a training session for players. It was for the coach's benefit to see what the teaching points are and how it's taught.
Yeah, well, I think it's something we've got to not be so afraid of. And I got so lucky with that clinic, because only the last few weeks before have I been doing some more like rehearsal stuff and on air stuff. So it was like, oh, this makes me look like I know what I'm talking about. It's great. But I think having it, and it doesn't have to be 15, 20 minutes, just a couple of reps of this skill set, you know, either on air or, you know, like 2-on-0 or 3-on-0 or whatever it is, just to get how it's supposed to be, and then you can start just building up. And I've seen a vast improvement in the skill acquisition since adding a bit more of that, just giving that time to have that rehearsal for everybody, not just like the demo. Giving everybody a chance to do it, and then start layering in those decisions. But the fear for me for leaning towards games approach was that, you know, it kept them engaged, because we do know that, you know, generations are different now and
their attention span shorter
and all that sort of stuff. But my goodness, was it engaging. It was so engaged. And again, it might be because I'm a bit of a basketball nerd and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But
look, like, for the players too.
They seemed to really, you know, like, and it got to the end of the session, and then they're like, oh, can you ask them if we can get a photo with them? And, you know, like, so, you know, if you hated that session, you're not going to
get a photo with the coaches,
you know. So
I think we live in, like, this coaching world at the moment. There's a bit of polarization. It's like, it's either skill development or it's games approach. Yeah. I think the answer's right down the middle.
Yeah.
Right. From what I saw them do, and these guys are some of the best in the business, right? Mm. Like, skill development, teach the skill, apply it into a games approach. Like, I don't think we should be one side or the other. I think we should be together doing it at the same time. Nearly hit the cable again, Rob, sorry.
No, I saw you do it. Like, it didn't make much of a noise this time through. But given I've kicked the table, like, you're okay. Like, you've got some runs on the board. Yeah, exactly. That can of Coke over there is looking very suspect as to what happens next.
It is empty.
But it is. But yeah, I think you're right, Nick. Like, I genuinely think, like, you can think what you want as a coach. That's cool. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say you have to do this and you can't do that. Again, if you sit there in a 1-2-2 or a 1-2-1-1 press in under 12s for the full game, I'm going to think you're a bit of a jerk. But, you know, that's a bit different. Like, you can have your own beliefs on it, and that's fine. Put out whatever your beliefs are, and I've got no problems with that whatsoever. But I don't think you need to necessarily tear down the other beliefs to make your beliefs stand out in that space. Because I looked at that the other night. There was not a coach, and there were some experienced coaches in there. Like, there were some state-level coaches. There were people that have been involved with national teams and senior team coaches in there. I was talking to one of the coaches afterwards, the coaches at the senior level, And he's like, that has changed my entire outlook on coaching. Like, and the whole thing. Like, and I mean, he's coaching a good level of basketball. And his thing was, that's not what I thought I was walking into. Like, I didn't think I was going to be seeing that when I came in here. And it was just cool. And look, when you watch the video, if you do go in and have a little bit of a look at it, this is probably not going to change your whole view on basketball and all those sorts of things. But it is just a different experience. And I think that's kind of what we want. Like, we want different ways to do different things depending on different personnel, because every year we have different personnel. We have to find what works. What works for under-12s probably doesn't work for under-16s. Like, it's not the same. But what I do know is that the best players want to be coached. Like, they don't want to just go through the motions. They don't want to just, hey, roll the ball out and we'll see what happens. The best players don't become the best players by just resting. The best players are the best players because they push themselves. They get pushed by other coaches. And there's that real thirst for knowledge and more. Like, they're always looking for more. And some of the kids on court on Wednesday night, I think it was that we watched it. But they're already good players. But I saw them get better in 60 minutes.
Yes, it was noticeable for me as well. Like significant, where I was like, wow, couldn't do that 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. Now, is it going to be reinforced? Who knows?
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, that's going to be the challenge, obviously, because you can do it once. That's fine. But, you know, is this something they're going to add to their game over the next couple of years? I hope so. But you never really know either. So it will be interesting to see where it sort of goes from there, I guess. The game on Thursday night, obviously, Panathinaikos played Partizan in it. Is it John Kane? I think it was on Thursday night. We went to the game, obviously, and had a little bit of a watch of it. Nick, I know you watched the first half. You're on dad duties.
I was on dad duty, yes.
Yes.
Orlando watched it as well, by the way.
Yeah, oh, good.
He was. I made sure he went for the right team, the one who did the clinic, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Early specialisation, you know, all about it.
Yep.
It was really interesting, again, to see what was taught in the clinic transfer over to the game. Mm. And, I mean, a couple of observations from the game in particular that I sort of made note of. Transition is transition. Like, there is no, I will just walk the ball. I think there's almost this this notion of European basketball that it's all walk-up sets and, you know, it's clinical and it's absolutely not.
Oh, it's clinical. Oh,
well, yeah, it is.
Yeah. But it's quick.
Not like that. Like, this was wild. Like, it was the amount of times the ball was dribbled over half court in transition, count on one hand. Like, the ball went. The bigs did unbelievable job of running lanes, deep ceiling, and being a threat and a presence down there.
And they got hit all game, like up to the first half I saw anyway. They were rim running, they would bang, and then they would start running again. Like, they just always in a sprint.
Yep, continually.
There was no, like you say, Rob, no dimmer switch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, and at that level, one, you have bigs. Two, you know they are bigs. Like, they're not trying to be wings or anything like that. They are genuine bigs.
But I think that's instilled at a younger age. So I think that they're taught that in they're maybe not given how you're a big, maybe not. I don't really know because I've never been a part of it. But they would be running that hard all through their juniors, surely.
Yeah, but
you don't just pick it up when you're in seniors.
No, you don't. And I think it is one of those things too where people get almost afraid to be the first kid down the floor. Like, there's a difference between like cherry picking out on the break and rim running. And it doesn't matter if you're a guard. If you're the first one down the floor, like, why would you run to the corner when you can run to the front of the rim, seal someone and get a layup out of it? Like, and I think that is something that I don't know that we've necessarily gone away from it, but we probably haven't emphasized it anywhere near as much as we have done previously, which is bigs rim running and just burying their defender under the rim.
But if you're a big, particularly in Australia at the moment, would you bother?
Well, you're probably not getting it, hey?
Correct.
You're not getting
it. So that's my point. You know, so I would looking at the game when I played, we got the ball inside the paint. So it was that's the only reason you do it, but like, you know, it was worth your energy because, you know, you knew the guards were going to hit you. If I was playing now, I'm probably going to just conserve that energy because if I'm going to get the ball, it's more likely off pick and roll play.
Yep.
So I'd rather
drag on ball instead.
And I still might probably won't get it, but I'm more likely in that place.
So then I'll pop everything so I get it back later.
And to be honest, though, that tends to be what we see a lot of.
Yeah.
Like at the moment, a post is not the first person down the floor. We're filling corners first because that pitch out three in the corner is something that's valued highly. Completely get it. That's okay. But they are. Our bigs tend to be drag on ball to pop. And it was amazing how many times the on-ball screen would get set. That big was out of there quickly. Like there was no, okay, I'll just take my time rolling out of this or popping it. No, they separate. Their ability to separate quickly off the on-ball was elite.
But again, because they'll get it.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a, you know, and that's not thing. A knock on guards. Like,
no, it is a knock on guards.
But out.
Because guards think the on-ball screen is for them. It is not for them. It's for the big.
Or just for them.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's exactly.
It's... It's just a way.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is at the moment. And why, I'm not too sure. But
you've got the ball in your hands. It's hard to get it. Like if you're the big, like you've almost been told rim run, protect the ring.
Rebound,
get the guards open.
And like who ends up on Insta?
Yeah, well, exactly right.
Like, that's the end of the day. That's when, you know, it's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, not seeing highlight clips of big rim running to knock at the ball.
I would love to see that, though. I would definitely follow that page, but I'd be the only one, right? There'd be like eight coaches who follow
this. There'd be the other six bigs that are in Australia that would also follow that page.
We'd be the only ones liking.
But that's the thing. And it is amazing, though, the level of ball security and ability to make passes off the bounce was phenomenal from the guards. Because when we talk about, you know, bigs will rim run because they feel like they're going to get the ball. That is one of the chats I find myself regularly having with guards is, would you run for you at the moment? Like, because at the moment you're not throwing the ball ahead, so why would they get out and run, which means another defender's in the back court and there's no space for you.
But it's up to the coach to keep that accountable as well, that accountability too. Yep. The other thing that was impressive for me in the game was, you know, the amount of low post plays. The amount of times they just throw that thing into the low post and like, again, it's professional level, so of course they're going to have a really good skill set. But how fantastic their footwork was and which shoulder they needed to turn with. If someone doubled, they knew exactly who to throw to on the other side of the floor.
Yep.
I was like, this is well drilled. This is why, like just coaches listening, this is why at the club coach accreditation, that's why post play is in there. Because it is absolutely relevant in the game. It is apps, and it should be taught, and it should be taught to all the players, not just the one that you think is the big either.
Agree, and that's the thing I would like to really impress upon people. Well, we spend all this time saying, oh, we don't want to pigeonhole kids and, you know, get the bigs out and doing some guard skills. Agree. It's certainly not suggesting that's wrong, but get your guards in the post every now and again, and it's amazing how many times, and we did it maybe a couple of years ago, I think it was, we were doing some post work in particular, and we threw one of the guards in the post, and they're like, oh, man, this is hard. Like, yeah. So imagine doing all this to not get the ball from you guys out on the perimeter. They're like, oh, yeah, I can see why they get annoyed at me.
But like, I think on the flip side, right? So, and again, we're talking about the highest of highly skilled athletes. Sure. So, but they work their butts off. They run the lane. They set their picks. They separate quickly. And the ball comes inside. They get to play their low post or, you know, and it was regular. So then down the other end, when they're in a drops defense, I saw the big show, like as in when I say show, chest to ball. So, and stay in front of the ball handler three times in the one screen. Like the one screening action.
So showed three times.
Yeah. So like, and so instead of they came off and he showed like was they were in their drops, but it was at the like at the level. Mm-hmm. So we met, they twisted, so he went back and he went back and he showed again. And then he showed again. And so this guard defender was almost like, oh, thanks, mate. Like, you know, like, because his play
job's
is
easy.
His play is not getting off and
was
getting
that on
20.
None? Was that on none? Is that the.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
So not a slouch of a player either. Like
No. Yeah. Probably one of, if not the top five, you know, players in EuroLeague. Yeah,
incredibly good.
Like, phenomenal.
But it's like I know they're very good players, but there's almost this
hasn't happened overnight.
Like subconscious thing of, hey, I'm going to do the work for you because you do the work for me down here. You know, that sort of thing that you could just feel it with the group that there was this real, you know, in it together type.
Well, I think they play for something that's bigger than not only themselves, but even their team. Like you speak about how old Panathinaikos is. Like, that's probably, like, it means something to them to do that. It's bigger than that team.
Certainly means something to their fans. Like, you look at how well-supported European basketball is in that sort of space. Phenomenal, like, for a start. But, you know, that was a packed house.
Yeah.
On a Thursday night when the NBL was started. So, like, Melbourne United were playing on Thursday night as well. So there would have been a whole bunch of supporters that are like, we're good. Like, we'll stay at home and watch them play the Jackies.
And Oakley Main Street was like packed out apparently as well.
Yeah,
like it was. Every cafe open, watching the game. Yep. It's huge.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we got in there early just because of traffic in general, and we live, you know, a good hour away from the city at times, depending on the wrong night. And like, we would have been in there maybe 2 hours before tip, and there were already people wandering around with like full kit, and all that sort of stuff.
Flags and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, there really was. But the style of basketball was just really aesthetically pleasing. Like, it was fun to watch, and that's the, I think, the European basketball treads the line really well between excitement and still basketball, whereas the NBA at times can look like, look, this is a bit of a product and a show, and it doesn't really kind of do it for me, whereas it looked like on Thursday night basketball, like, and that was the fun part, I think.
But, like, the NBA is recognizing what EuroLeague are doing. They're absolutely actually sending their players to go, hey, go do 2 years in Eurobasket, EuroLeague, and then come back. So learn to play basketball and then come back. That's literally what they're saying.
Well, and why though? Because they learn how to play a role, play in a team. Like, they're not sending a LeBron James or a Caitlin Clark to Europe. Like, they don't need, like, they are coming and they are the star of their team, so it's quite okay. Doncic may be a little bit of a different scenario, but look at how many MVPs of the NBA have been from Europe over the last decade.
But you mentioned Doncic, right? And we saw it in the games. There were two under 19 athletes.
Kids playing.
Playing.
Yep.
And playing minutes.
Yeah, both for Partizan.
Yeah. Yep. I would challenge that happens here at the
elite level.
Yep. But I thought one of the best parts was that they were held just as accountable.
Yeah, they didn't.
I mean, I couldn't understand because they were obviously speaking another language. But
you could just by the body language.
You could just tell you knew what was happening.
Like, I know that coach's point anywhere.
Yeah, it wasn't a pat on the back for great shot selection, I can assure you. But
they were they were playing and they were involved, so it wasn't like the other four just took care of it. And
well, the other four took care of that player.
Yeah.
The amount of times there would be an error, there'd be a free throw situation, they'd be grabbing that player and it's like, hey, here's what we need, this, and this, or don't do it that way, do it this way. This is their rules. Like, it was really cool to see.
Yeah,
like,
but it was great to see them
play.
Like, it was great to see them out there. And so that was the reason I say that is obviously Doncic was an incredible talent.
Yep.
But he was playing in EuroLeague at, 16 or something like that, crazy.
And he was very good.
Yes,
and remains
and
very
look
good
at him
very
now. I think that sort of plays into the, you know, having those academies from so young, and then being able to have that
just consistent teaching style.
Yeah, absolutely.
It started, I've got to be honest, my mind going a little bit of what do our coaches need. And, you know, accredited courses, I still think, have a lot of value. Going to coaching clinics still have a lot of value, all those sorts of things. Do we need to be more prescriptive with our coaches as to, look, we need you to teach this in under 12s and we need you to teach this in under 14s? Because there is a part of it too, let's face it, middle pick and roll isn't going away anytime soon. Like, it's going to be a part of basketball for a lot of years to come because of both the skill sets and the athletes that we have available to us. Should we start teaching middle pick and roll decision making and skill sets in under 12s now? Because it's not going anywhere. Like, they're going to need to know it at some point, so give them the longest amount of time to get good at it. It's the same with denial defense. Denial will always have a place within basketball. It's also the hardest one to get right just due to the movements, the awareness and all those sorts of things. So teaching it under 12, so we're getting them, you know, the reps and the
It's now years. A skill.
It is.
It's now part of a skill set. I think the other thing as well, we speak about at the community level, right? These are the five things that we should be teaching. So we do speak about like shooting, passing, dribbling, defense, movement. Like they're five things that we should be doing. And I'm sure they buy in when I'm delivering that message and here's how you do it. But we kind of live in this world where we also like looking over our shoulder at the new shiny toy that pops up on socials or websites. And just remember what you're doing this stuff for. Like there's no DOC or, you know, Peter Lonergan's not walking past going, wow, that's a really fancy drill. I'm going to recruit that coach. It just doesn't work that way. What they're looking at is the players. The players are your resume. If you, like Zoe, what have you spoken about this weekend in the Jamboree? You spoke about this is how I'm going to evaluate you as a coach. It was how they start and how they finish. That's how I'm – the players are the resume. So, like, you don't need the fancy shiny toy over here. If they can dribble both hands and pass both hands, then they can help set a pick and roll. If they can play defense and guard one-on-one, it's a skill and it's going to help them for a very long time.
Well, and what do our players want to do? They, in a lot of cases, our players want to look like the pros. Like, remember during, like, COVID lockdowns, there was – like, we're obviously limited with how much training we could do. And one of the things that got sent out was, hey, look, this is a little basketball move. And it would be someone that's done something somewhere and it was like, hey, go replicate it and film it and bring it back in. And just give the players the ability to sort of look like a basketball player. And I still remember like Dash Daniels one, like straight away. Like it was a little bit of a, someone split an on-ball screen.
I think it was Doncic.
It might have been. Did a little bit of a sort of 360 spin to get away from the defense and made it off the backboard. And like Dash just came in within like 35 seconds of it going out. Like he's clearly gone and gone, I can do that. Walked outside and practiced it.
Well, he not just did that. He then walked up to the camera and went, first time, baby.
Yeah, like but straight away. So what do our kids want to have a crack at? Looking like pro athletes.
Mm.
So can we put them in positions to not be pro athletes, obviously, but practice some of the things that they might see further on down the road? I'm not saying put all the eggs in that basket or anything like that. Of course, depends. But there is an element too where it's like, well, look, how much of this can apply? And, you know, this weekend's a good example. It's under 12 Jamboree. We've got 48 coaches here, which is phenomenal, like to have 48 coaches give up their weekend and some of their school holidays to come up and help coaches. We have everything from people that have barely done any coaching that have come in here to experienced assistant coaches at state teams and those sorts of things and everything in between. And it's great to see how many of them are prepared to help each other and do it for the right reasons. And that is to help the kids. And that's your job as a coach, help the kids. Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what it boils down to.
And yeah. I'll put it to you just really quickly. I bet you anything that Panathinaikos game was playing and there's a 13-year-old in somewhere in Greece looking going, oh, I do that action.
Yeah,
100%.
I want to be that.
Almost put my money on, put my money on that, and that's what we should be.
Yep,
that's what we should be.
But I also, just to be a bit of a pain in what we're doing, I also do understand the pressures of our coaches too.
Oh, of course.
And so, like,
and I wasn't really blaming the coaches.
No, no, no. But we are. I just want to make the point just for any of them listening because. I've been there too where I've, you know, sacrificed things to get wins because that's what my DOC wanted or that's what, you know, I thought had to happen or all that sort of stuff. And so we're in a pretty good position now where we're, you know, we can be development focused because we're in charge of our programs for a start, but we're also, you know, not coaching games and we don't have those external factors of, you know, what comes with winning and losing.
I think it is program related. I don't think that message goes to the coaches. I think it's program in general because they're the ones who really mold the framework, right, of the teams. I don't think it's up to the coaches. I think they just get educated and they help deliver the message. I think it comes higher up for sure.
Yeah, and that's what I mean though. So if you're at a club where, you know, winning is a priority for whatever reason, then – you know, you're going to do that. So definitely understanding of the pressures that come with, and then obviously the kids want to win and the parents want to win and the, you know, all that sort of stuff. So definitely understanding of that. What would be great, and I suppose a little bit of a call to action, I guess, if we could, is, you know, who wants to come on this journey? Like we've had all these learnings out of this one clinic. You know, who wants to try and maybe take this a little bit further with us? so we're together and we're all on the same page and we're consistent. Like you mentioned earlier, Rob, about consistency in teaching being one of the advantages of the academy system that they have, or the setup that the Europeans have. You know, who wants to try and be a part of that with us? And I know there are some out there already, which is awesome. But imagine if we were all together, like what we could potentially, especially in Victoria, with the numbers that we have and the participation rates that we have, what we could maybe do.
Yeah, I think there's a lot, to be perfectly fair. But it's also a case of, I don't know that you do want everyone doing the same thing either. And, you know, I am actually okay with some people doing things differently. And it's like, hey, we want to try. Because I think part of what we do is have a theory on something, test it, see if it works. Okay, didn't. Okay, where did it fall down? All right, pivot. What's next?
But do you think they're doing same system? I think their skill development's the same.
Well, and I think that's
the, I think that's what's the same.
I think that's the key. Yeah. Like we do have to get, and I'm really cautious to phrase it this way, but I've got no other way of doing it. We want better players. That's ultimately what it comes down to. But better players don't just walk in the door. Better players have to be developed and crafted. And to be honest, better players have to be kept in the sport, because we have a lot of kids that leave the sport that are super talented because they haven't enjoyed their time with their coach, their team, their environment, whatever the case might be. And so this is the job of a coach, I think, is to, one, keep your kids in the sport, keep your kids enjoying the sport, happy with it, like, but also motivated to go and do some stuff in their own time. That's the real challenge, I think. And if you need help with that, reach out, because we can help you with that. Like, that is something we can absolutely do. Similar, like the drills that go up on Mondays, that's fine. Like, it's an activity you can do at training sessions. And, you know, we do appreciate the people that message in and say, hey, I really like this one, or have you got something for this? Absolutely. We'll try and help you as best we possibly can. I got a message from someone in the Solomon Islands the other day saying, hey, I really like this drill. Like, you know, thanks for sending it through. Like, that's the reach that we can actually get with that, which is phenomenal in itself. But I'm starting to think now, well, do we go, not back to basics is not quite the thing, but do we do some stuff where it's like, hey, let's actually talk about the crossover and let's really break down the teaching points we want in the crossover, where it's going to be used and those sorts of things. And it might be something that we have to do with the use of film, as to, look, let's grab a EuroLeague game and break that down a little bit and, hey, see how they've used this crossover. There's a reason they've used that and not this, this, and this. And it's the efficiency in particular, because I looked at what got done with the coaches clinic on Wednesday night. And it's funnily enough, I was in a stadium on Friday morning, was watching a couple of coaches work out players, and it's like, none of this works. Like, none of this applies to the next level as to what you're teaching here. And, you know, the skills trainer walks in with like the big headphones on, like 85 chains, and, you know, looking like they've, you know, just, you know, hung with Don King for a little while as they're trying to get the next boxing match or something like that. But it really was a case.
There's always an old school reference by Rob, I've noticed, every pod.
Look, me and four other people will get it. Everyone else has got
it.
Chance,
I only got it because of The Simpsons. Yeah.
But that was the thing. Like, I looked at that workout and it's like, you're not setting your players up for success here, because you're doing stuff that you think looks good, but it doesn't actually apply to a game situation. And that's my concern. Not so much what they do in the workout. Like, great that they're on court, great that they're doing something, great that they care enough to be involved and invested in it. Fantastic. Like, love that. However, does it apply? Because if it doesn't apply, it's just work for work's sake. And, you know, how many people want to do that? And, I mean, that's a really long-winded way of sort of giving an answer on that, I suppose. But for mine, like, if you do want help with this, let us know, and let us know exactly what you want help with, and we'll get working on it. Like, because for us, like, we're really conscious of this too, that it's not, like, we are in a really privileged position where we don't care about who wins and who loses. Like, it's, I promise you, and again, only because I spoke about it on the pod last week, having had state team interviews recently, not once did I look down that and say, oh, gee, they won this, and they won this, and they won this, and they won this. It's like, no. I know they've produced this player or had a part in playing of producing this player. I know they're heavily involved with the system that they teach at their association level. I know that they give back to Basketball Victoria programs. I know that they buy into what direction we're going. That's what gets your resume looked at straight away. Not, oh, I know that coach wins. And yes, winning is a part of it. Certainly not discounting that, but it's not the first thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for who can teach.
Players are your resume. Like, yeah. I've been told that by NBL coaches that I've had the privilege of working with, the first thing they said to me, they're your resume, because when you go and apply for those jobs in the future, not just state teams, but NBL level, like our higher level, they call the players. The CEOs call the players and go, tell me about this coach. That's the first thing they do.
Yep.
So
makes a lot of sense. Remember at the very start of this one, I'm like, hey, we may only do like 20 to 25 minutes on this.
You were dreaming.
Yeah, 55 minutes later, we're about to wind up the podcast. So just a reminder to everyone, obviously Coach Wellbeing Month is starting first week of October. So we'll have another podcast just in the lead up to that as to what that's going to look like. Obviously, there'll be some content that comes out around Coach Wellbeing and wellness over the month of October. And then by November, we'll try and get everyone just some habits to work in. And that won't be anything too extensive. That'll just be some things. Look, start of the week, try and build on these habits over the course of this next week, or, you know, try and do these three things, those types of things. So it won't be anything. We're not asking you to go and run like 15Ks or anything like that. Like, we are mindful that no one can just on a whim or anything like that. So we are really conscious of that. But if there is anything you want some more information on, please do reach out and we'll happily get it to you. Thank you both for jumping in. We're off to boys training at a Trooper now. Yeah. So it is practice time. So we better start you know, doing all the things we've been preaching about for the last 55 minutes, as it turns out. So thank you both for jumping in, coaches. We'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.